Support for NHPR's Something Wild podcast comes from you, our listeners and subscribers, and from the Gundalow Company, offering public sailing trips, charters, and summer adventure camps on the Piscataqua River from Portsmouth, exploring the region's maritime heritage and environment. More at gundalow.org.
Wow, it's Labor Day already.
Summer's last hurrah.
How about we go out with some sun, surf, and sand?
Hey, sign me up, but only for a visit. I'm Dave Anderson from the Forest Society.
And I'm Chris Martin from New Hampshire Audubon. And this is Something Wild.
Welcome to another edition of New Hampshire's Wild Neighborhoods. And once again, we take a tour of a great place to visit, but a hard place to eke out a living.
There are only a few examples of maritime rocky shores within our state's borders. It's all located on our seacoast or on the Isles of Shoals.
Yeah, go figure. But in some ways, this neighborhood is a lot like the Alpine Zone we visited a while back. Pretty inhospitable, especially the islands.
Yeah, they get hit pretty hard by crashing ocean waves, gusty winds, and hot sun at low tide.
Our rocky shores actually contain several distinct marine zones, and we want to dig into just one of those today.
Right. We're going to look at the rocky intertidal zone.
But first, some basics. It's called intertidal because it occupies the area of shoreline between the high tide and the low tide.
And since the tides are such an important component in this area, we thought we'd find out a little bit more about them.
So tides are, theoretically, tides are the changing of the Earth's sea levels due to astronomical factors, which more specifically is the sun and the moon, or the gravitational influence of the sun and the moon.
That's Jonathan White, a marine conservationist and author of the book Tides, the Science and Spirit of the Ocean.
Well, that's the elementary school definition of tides. We've all heard that before, but...
But there are all kinds of other factors that change the sea level on a daily, hourly, or monthly basis, like meteorological tides, for example, low pressure, high pressure, wind, and so forth.
White also mentions many other factors that affect our tides, from planetary movements to meteorological events to harmonics.
He says we're just beginning to understand all these factors.
And over time, of course, that really changes what the tide is doing on the coast and how it erodes and how it behaves and where things can live and how large the intertidal zone is. And from a biological point of view, whether it's optimum for this kind of species or optimum for that kind of species.
And we're all familiar with the intertidal zone. It's where we go with our kids to find all those fascinating tide pool creatures.
And this is a difficult place to live. Twice a day, you are pounded by waves and then exposed to sun and wind.
It may not sound so harsh on an August afternoon, but imagine enduring that relentless regimen in November or February.
Sounds pretty brutal, but some algae is able to make it, and barnacles.
Hey, did you know that all seaweed are algae?
And barnacles, which are little crustaceans that secrete an incredibly powerful cement. It anchors them to rocks, pilings, boats, practically everything, and allows them to stay anchored in spite of all that wave action.
Barnacles, in fact, depend on the activity. They need a high tide to bring them food every day. When the tide comes in and submerges them in water, they open their shells and these feather-like appendages called cirrha emerge to filter microscopic organisms out of the water.
And then, when the tide goes out, they pull them back in. They close their shells and they wait patiently for the next high tide.
Tide pools temporarily trap other creatures, like hermit crabs and periwinkles.
And of course, this zone is habitat for some really cool stuff, like starfish and sea urchins.
And up the food chain we go, to birds who nest just above the intertidal zone, like the Arctic tern or the federally threatened piping plover.
They're out of here when the cold weather comes, but they rely on all those morsels of protein to raise their chicks and fuel up before migration.
Enjoy the last of the warm weather and keep an eye out for the flora and fauna wherever you go. I'm Dave Anderson.
And I'm Chris Martin. Something Wild is produced by Andrew Perella.
And is a joint production of New Hampshire Audubon, the Society for the Protection of New Hampshire Forests, and NHPR. But imagine enduring that relentless regime. But imagine enduring that Damn it! Okay.
Outtake.
No.
You can help NHPR shorten the fall fun drive. Hi, I'm Laura Kanoy, host of The Exchange. For every 100 listeners who become sustaining members, we'll knock off a full day of on-air fundraising this fall. It's that simple. So if you've been waiting for the perfect time to support the programs you love, like The Exchange, Fresh Air, and All Things Considered, this is it. Become an NHPR sustaining member today for as little as $5 or $10 a month. It's quick and easy to do at nhpr.org.